Okay, good evening. Thank you everybody for coming. Floyd, this year's guest speaker. I'm going to start in Yiddish. Heinz Bamir is a yontif. Vals is mein Geburtstag. Nicht mein jüdischer Geburtstag, mein goyischer Geburtstag. Today for me is a yontif because it's my birthday. It's not my Hebrew birthday, it's my English birthday. So besides for being true, this is a quote I've heard many times from my father in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. My father was at an event and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky spoke, and that's how he opened up his drasha. So I'd like to make two points. I'd like to thank my mother and to explain my father. 34 years ago today, my mother brought me into this world, and without her I wouldn't be here. So besides for other things I may have done l'tayv, we hope that the accomplishments of the Chayshir Mishpat Kollel have made the Tsar Gidol Banim worthwhile, and they should stay that way ad Bias Goel Tzedek. I'd also like to explain my father through this story. I've heard the story many times, and usually my father finishes it off by saying that when he told this story to his Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva of Long Beach, who should be Zaycha to Refuah Shleima B'Sarich Shar Chayil Yisrael, his Rebbe asked him to repeat Rabbi Yaakov's statement two or three times to hear again that Rabbi Yaakov said it's a yontif for him because it's his English birthday. So besides for the point of the English calendar, the Hebrew calendar, it's not where I want to go. I thought that this story, which for me is true today, really explains what a kollel does. A kollel is about a fusion. It's about a bridge. It's about connecting Tiras Hashem with today, with the current world. And the Reshiva, by telling my father to say the story again, short sentences from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, was telling him that the analysis of a gadol about anything is unmatched. You can't find it anywhere else. You can't find that clarity any other way. A kollel takes the Torah and makes it relevant. It makes it user-friendly. It makes it applicable. And a Chayshir Mishpat Kollel has a dual relationship because when the Kehillah brings their Chayshir Mishpat Shailas to us, and actually by way of introducing my father, there isn't a light bulb that goes off in the room. There's a chandelier that lights up. When we see, when we have the schus to see that the Kehillah wants the guidance of the kollel, and that the kollel can provide that guidance, there's no greater source of chizuk for us. So, thank you very much for coming. I hope we all come away mechuzik, and we come away mechuzik and with a greater appreciation for the role that we both play in supporting one another, and the unique ability of our kollel and our Rosh kollel to provide that service for the kehillah. It's covered to introduce Avi Meir Shlita.
I really failed to tell you that his Hebrew birthday is Yud Gimel, which meant that shortly after his birth, his mother had to take care of him because I was nowhere near anywhere to take care of him. I was hanging from a chandelier in Rabbi Zucker's house. Anyways, that happens to be the truth. There's a pasuk in Yeshayah Nuntes Yudalit. Pasuk says, "For husag ochor mishpat utzedoka meirochay tamet." Now the Pashat Taich in this pasuk, the way the Matzudas David says it, is bavur zeh, because of what the preceding psukim deal with, the Klal Yisrael did things wrong. Hamishpat haroy lasois biyakum husag ochor. That which HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have done for Klal Yisrael was not done. Lo naseh. But tzedakah sheftiach lo hamakom, and that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu guaranteed, so to speak, to do chesed and tzedakah for us, tamoy mirochayk, is going to stand far away, v'loy bo, and it's not going to come. That's the pshat. Say again, the pasuk pshat, that's the way the Metzudas translates the pasuk. The Beis HaLevi, in this week's parsha in Truma, says an amazing taich in the pasuk. He says, "Vuhusag ochor mishpat utzdokah meirochayk, tamoy de achar shehusag hamishpat." If people are not involved in mishpat to make sure their money belongs to them, al kein gama tzedakah she'oisem my medes meirochayk v'yeno moyel hem klal. The tzedakah does not help, and he says an amazing thing. The reason that Truma follows Mishpatim, the Bitchila, Kaidim Shiyas Adam Tzedakah, Bememainai, before a person does Tzedakah with his money, Tzorach Lirois, Shalyia Bememainai, Chshash Gezel. He has to make sure the money is his. Diyim Loi Kain, Eina Tzedakah, Mayelis Loi Klau. That's what the Pasuk means. Vuhusagocha Mishpat, if a person is not involved in Mishpat, and therefore his money may not be his own money, Tzedakah Meirachak Tamoy. The Tzedakah is not going to help. And he makes an incredible analogy. Ukemoi the lulav hagozel posel mishumitzah baba aveira. So too, this money does not work for tzedakah. The money doesn't work for tzedakah. L'chatchila, this koilo, we used to say, we're here to heighten the awareness. Heighten the awareness. Not only b'nogeya, making sure that a person's money is his own money, or her own money. But it's also nogeya many other halachas. Last year at this event we announced that we're going to start a second Seder. A second Seder for four of our younger light. When I say younger light, it's an interesting word. Baruch Hashem, many of us, most of us are Zaydas, and Baruch Hashem, it's a schus to walk into the kollel to sit and learn with such Talmid Chacham, real Talmid Chacham. So, Rabbi Weinkrantz and Rabbi Pickholtz and Rabbi Schaffel and the birthday boy, they've been working second Seder and answering Shilas, helping people with the Heteriska, helping people with Shtar Chatzi Zohar, helping people with Inyanim of Ribbis and Nachlis. But there's something else also that I feel I should mention. My great grandfather, my mother's father's father, came to America in 1904. He was the first Boston of Chassid there ever was. He met the Boston Rebbe. I believe Yitzchak was the Boston Rebbe. I was growing up. He met his father at the boat, and Pinchas. And he came in 1904, and he was Baruch Hashem never Mechal Shabbos. And so to my Zayd Ola Shalom. But it's interesting. That's 1904. In 2017, we have discovered, and second Seder for sure, all these people involved, that there are businesses that are open 24/7. And even if a person is sitting in shul, and a person is davening in shul and learning in shul, there are a number of shilas, and we've been working very hard, very hard. These are cutting edge shilas, and I would like to say that there are two incredible people involved in Chayshim Mishpat. One, Rav Shlomo Miller, one, Rav Chaim Cohen. The peak of the people who know Chayshim Mishpat, and it's a very challenging issue. It's very challenging, and it's very nogeya to millions and millions and probably billions of dollars of Jewish businesses. And these four people I just mentioned are working very hard, and it's taking a long time, a long time. And therefore, I'd like to say something. Until now, we said that the Kollel's motto was heighten the awareness. Now, I'd like to say that we're still trying to heighten the awareness of Chayshim Mishpat, and now we're trying to heighten the accurateness of Chayshim Mishpat. And we looked up the word. I told my wife I wanted to say this sentence. She said, "There's no word accurateness." I said, "There is a word accurateness. I said, let's look it up. When we looked it up, there is a word accurateness. It's a noun. So we want to heighten the accurateness now. I have to tell you the truth, Rabbi Say, it's a hard limud. It's been very hard. This is our 19th year. People who have money should make sure that sometimes people are not aware. We were not aware. That people have to make sure that the money that they have is theirs. Lechatchila. So their tzedakah should be lechatchila. And that, at this moment, I'd like to stop for a second and say that's a Shevach Vaidor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and for all the supporters of the Kol, Shevach Vaidor to everything that you've done, and we hope, as Hashem, you'll continue to do. And we hope we're working b'shutfus. We're working b'shutfus. We're trying to mine through Chesh and Mishpat to help everybody else to make sure that what they have is their own. And maybe what they do will have an incredible off to. Now, I'm going to change. I was supposed to say something I'm not. I'm going to change right now. I was asked, which is a covet for me, to introduce the fact that the Rebbetzin just put out a new book. I saw the title. It was a shiloh. Should I mention the new book to everybody, or should my wife mention the new book just to the women? Once I saw the title, I had no shiloh. I mentioned the new book. The new book is called The New Normal. Now, normal alone is a chiddush. Normal alone is a chiddush. It's almost a forgotten art form in the world. And the fact that Rebbetzin Tversky, the Tverskys themselves, and then the subtitle is Living as a... This, I'm just reading. I didn't make this up. Living as a Frum Jew in a Crazy World. I usually say that at least once a Shabbos. Living as a Frum Jew in a Crazy World. So she should be Zeicha and they should be Zeicha. I'd like to conclude right now my remarks by saying that we're going to do something different. We're stopping just for a minute or two for people to take something else to eat. We've never done this before because we've never had such an opportunity to have two people speak simultaneously. So that wall that you see over there is now going to move west and close up the rooms so that Rebbetzin Tversky will be speaking for the women and Rabbi Tversky will be speaking for the men. If there's a problem with the acoustics, we have techies who are going to work it out, Bishas Maisa, which means that the women may end up going downstairs. We'll have to see how things work. So right now, anybody wants to take something to eat, please do so. It should take about 2 minutes. Carlos is going to help us right now close the doors, and then we'll formally introduce the Rabbi Tversky Shlita. Okay, we have Belma.
Okay.
Okay, Rabbi Saya. I could make one joke that sometimes people ask about the mechitzah and yeshurin. Pretty good. Okay, anyways. I'd like to mention, al pi chayshe mishpat, that there's something called matronus, and there's something called chilcha shchenim. And those of us who are zeichet to live in Chicago know that although geographically it may take 90 minutes and it may be 90 miles to get to Milwaukee, everybody in Chicago feels a kinship. Everybody in Chicago feels a shaychus. Everybody in Chicago feels like you can always rely on the Tursky's, on the Tursky mishpacha. Besides the fact that it was zeicha to have the two members of the mishpacha, including the son of the Rav, who is Gevalik Kehila here, and is also a member of our Kehil. But I don't have to say for us in Adas Yeshurin, for us in Chicago, for us in the Chayshim Mishpah Kehil, Rabbi Rebetzin was a scholar in residence for us. Rabbi Tursky was the guest speaker when we had the Chag HaSmicha, when a number of us got Yodin Yodin. But more than that, I believe we all feel like we're mishpacha. I've told many people that who've come to a child and said, "Yeah, you have to go to Milwaukee. Go to Milwaukee. And don't tell Rabbi Tursky I sent you. Just go to Milwaukee. Go talk to Rabbi Tversky, go talk to the Rebetzin." But on a personal level, as far as our mishpach is concerned, there's a certain ava and such a shaychus. So it's a cover that it worked out this way, that because Baruch Hashem, the Rav is here because he has a simcha this Per Shabbos, the chasen of an enikel, the offer for the Shabbos, the chasen is going to be in a few days. So we're thanking him, Yumka Dalibi, that they both agreed so graciously to speak, and we had the opportunity to have the men here and the women here about the challenges of working in the workplace, and who better to explain the challenges bizmanenu than Rabbi Tversky Shlita Sakovic Gadol there. Yeah, whatever.
I'm genuinely flattered by the introduction. I once heard many years ago Reb Beryl Wein get up to speak after a particularly ornate introduction. He said, "That's amazing, the introduction. I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say." The affection which was expressed earlier by Yermod Adasra is certainly reciprocal. We feel very, very privileged to have this relationship, and I'm pleased that we had an opportunity to come and in some way acknowledge our relationship by sharing some thoughts with the rabbi's kehila. I think that much of what I say is going to be a commentary on what was said here earlier by both Rabbi Cohns. And I want to issue a disclaimer that I'm going to be saying some things where I believe I'm going to be annoyed derish and not annoyed mekayim. There, I'm going to hold all of us over here to a higher standard, and not one which I believe in good faith I can profess to live up to all the time. And in the course of doing so, I believe that some of the things that I say may be somewhat severe, somewhat harsh. And I'm hoping, since many of you are very, very close friends and members of the family, that you will be charitable in the fact that I'm really not out to cause any injuries here. We have an expression which the Cheshen Mishpat people will appreciate. Kaladon dinemisla mitoi, any judge, any beistin that manages to render a halachic conclusion and a case before it, which is emes la'amitoi, the truth to its truth. So it's considered as though he's a shutif in my sibereshis, as though he was a partner in the creation of the world. So I'm not going to go into why this makes someone a partner in the creation of the world, but I am interested in exploring with you the expression of the truth to its truth, as though somehow there was a truth which is not to its truth. What kind of a truth requires a second level of probity and a second level of integrity? What is the point of reference for emes l'amito? Some of the things that we don't know are offshoots of the entire halachic process, especially as it relates to the marketplace, are some of the things that are happening in almost epidemic proportions today. When we talk about the dissolution of the family, we talk about marriages that are falling apart, and we're talking about children that are off the derech, and we're talking about not only children who are off the derech, but are in some very counterproductive, very destructive kinds of lifestyles. We're talking about all kinds of social dysfunction and a great deal of unhappiness. I don't think that it's a secret that we are, as a society or as a culture, we're a very unhappy culture. One might say we're depressed. If the pharmaceutical industry is to be any kind of measure of where we are as a society, then I believe the evidence would point to the fact that there's a whole lot of medicine that's given, psychotropic medicines, which are designed to help people with depression, help people with anxiety, help people with all kinds of emotional stress. So we have all kinds of pundits and all kinds of experts that are desperate to find the key. Why is it that it seems that our society is so vulnerable to all of these very serious symptoms of dysfunction? Why is it that somehow, that more than at any other time in history, when we have so much and we're so blessed with such abundance, and yet we are so unhappy? This week we are going to be reading in the Torah about the fashioning of a Mishkan, about the fashioning of a tabernacle. And the Mefarshim talk about this particular expression of Usuli Migdash v'shachanti b'seichom. They will make for me a Migdash, a tabernacle, and I will dwell in their midst. And the Alshach HaKodesh is probably one of the first to make this comment. It doesn't say I will dwell in the tabernacle or in it, but b'seichom, in them. And that the objective of the Mishkan was that the Ribbono Shel'olam, that the Master of the World, would be able to dwell, to find himself in a very panimistic way, in a very integral way, within every single Jew, within their character, within their person, that there would be something of Kaviyochel, of the Ribbono Shel'olam, that would find its way, as though the Shekhinah somehow would rest not only in the Kodesh HaKodashim, in the Holy of Holies, but it would also rest in every person. And I doubt that any of us really feel that we have achieved that, despite the fact that in many ways we have what's called today Ach Shodol. We have so many people, Kenahala, that are sitting and learning and Shemrei Torah Mitzvahs, and there was such a groundswell of less today, but in the last 40, 50 years, such a groundswell of people coming back into the fold, people who were drawn into the Kedusha, that were drawn back to their roots. So we're looking at a time in history which is in many ways perhaps one of the richest times in history in terms of Shmiras HaTorah, of Torah observance. So how is it that in this particularly gifted time, in our blessed time, why is it that we feel somehow so removed? We don't feel the Shachanti B'Seichem. We don't find ourselves sensing that the Shechina is in our midst. It's almost as though we're going through the motions. We go through the motions on almost a robotic way. We do the things that we're supposed to do. And there is a level of frustration because we do some of those things sacrificially. We do those things in ways that really go beyond the call of duty. And yet, it seems that it's slipping through our fingers. So I want to talk about one of the principles that was referred to here, and that's that you can't build a Mishkan with stolen goods or with materials that have come to someone's possessions in ways that are somewhat less than exalted. So it's not only that maybe someone should not have taken something or earned something, so there are ways in which people can overcharge someone else, they didn't steal it. There are ways in which people get things through violating the laws of Leisachmoy, they pay for it, but they've done so in a violation of a very serious thing of law. There are things that people go after and acquire because they're jealous or envious. The point is that there are many, many ways in which things come into our possession for reasons that are less than particularly sublime reasons. And then, besides all of that, we have the fact that people can make contributions. They can make contributions to the Mishkan because of the fact that someone else who they're trying to keep up with the Joneses has given, or because they were embarrassed into giving. One of the Mefoshim says that the reason that they had Chachmei Lev, who were the artisans, who were the craftsmen of the Mishkan, is because it wasn't only the expertise in craftsmanship, but these people needed to be able to look at whatever gold and silver was given to them and understand the motivation, understand the heart of the giver. And when the person who gave it with a full heart and gave it because there was a yearning for this person to be able to touch something infinite, that went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, maybe it went into the Yoreh. And when people gave for reasons because either they were compelled to give or because they gave because they were competing with their neighbors or for certainly less illustrious reasons, those kinds of things ended up maybe in the perimeter of the Mishkan. But that required insight, required somebody being able to look at how something came to be and to know that it had a legitimate place. Recently I saw in one of the magazines that the Steiplov would receive every year a check from two brothers who were partners in a business, and it was a very handsome sum of money which they would send to the Steiplov to be distributed to charity. Obviously the Steiplov was someone that they could rely upon, he had full integrity, and that they knew that their dollars were going to go to the right places. And this would happen every year. A check would come in for, I believe it was $20,000, and the Steiplov would distribute the money to the poor. On one occasion, the Gabbai came in and handed the Steiplov the check, and the Steiplov said, I'm not taking the check. So he said, Rebbe, there's all these people waiting. He said, I can't take the money. He was mystified. He went out and called up the donor, and he said to him, I gave the check to the stipler, and he rejected it. It was a long silence. And he said, you know what? Call me back in a couple hours, and I'll tell you what to do. The guy waited a few hours. He called back, and the donor said, okay, go back and give him the check again. So he went in, he gave him the check again, and the stipler received it happily. Understandably, the donor, the gabbai, was completely out of his league here, and he went back, picked up the phone, and said, what just happened? He said, well, every year, me and my brother were partners, and we both give half of this $20,000 so that the stipler can give charity, and we feel very good about it. He said, but several months ago, me and my brother got into a terrible argument. We haven't talked in months. And he said, it came time for us to give the check. I didn't want to talk to my brother about it. I just assumed that he would want this money to go. So I sent the $20,000 as a gift for both of us. Apparently, he said, the stipler, when he saw the check, felt that I had not included my brother. So he said, after your phone call, I called up my brother. I said to him, this is silly. We have to make peace. He told him what had transpired. The two brothers resumed their former relationship. He said, and now you can go back. He said, and give him the check. And then Stipel was Chachme Lev. He's one of the people who could look at something and have a sense of where this was coming from and how it was, how it came to be. There is a principle over here that we call Koyach HaPoyel B'Nifo, that anything at all which is produced by someone has the energy, in a certain sense, the identity of the doer, of the actor in that which is produced. And so it is that the Chachmei Lev understood the Koyach HaPoyel B'Nifo. They understood somehow how something came to be. And many, parenthetically, many Gedolim would refuse to receive any kind of money that they had any kind of suspicion that the money would have come from someone who earned the money by being Mechal Shabbos. Numerous such stories and anecdotes. Because Koyach HaPoyel B'Nifo. But imagine, and I believe today we need to imagine, that if we are supporting our educational institutions with money that comes from the government, which is illegally represented, so if for whatever reason we think we're pulling one over on whatever the agency is to give us money for frivolous numbers or fraudulent information, and then we are going to educate a generation of children on the basis of this money which came in through untruths, which came in through misrepresentations, we're really sadly mistaken. And I believe that some of the repercussions and some of the ramifications and some of the casualties that we are looking at in our educational system are not completely removed from this factor of Koyach HaPoyel B'Nifo, for which reason the interests of and the thrust of a Chesh Mishpat Kolel is of the utmost importance. But I want to add something to that issue, and I'll add it by introducing another principle. And that principle is a statement by Chazal, Chesomoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. The seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the seal of the Almighty, is truth. So when do you use a seal? In the old days, of course, they would melt wax, put it on, whether it was an envelope, or they'd put it on some kind of a container to make sure that the contents were not tampered with. They'd melt wax, and then they had a signet ring or some kind of a signet which they would press into the hot wax. And you couldn't break the seal without seeing that it had been tampered with. So you knew when you received something that where the seal was still intact, that the contents had not been invaded or intruded upon. So the Ribbono Shel Olam has a seal, and his seal is emes. So where are we looking for the seal? What is it exactly that this seal is protecting? What are the contents that it's protecting? And I would like to believe that what it's protecting is his presence. So that the Ribbono Shel Olam is present everywhere in the world. His energy sustains every single thing which is. Anything which exists because the master of the world sustains it every single moment. And his presence is waiting for us, especially Klal Yisrael, perhaps uniquely and exclusively Klal Yisrael, to interact with opportunities, to interact with people, to interact with interactions. Whatever happens in our lives, when we sit down at a dinner table, when we drink a glass of water, when we go to the bathroom, whatever it is that we are doing, at any given moment of the day, there is a challenge. It's an opportunity. And an opportunity to acknowledge the fact that in that moment, there is the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who sustains that moment. And particularly and uniquely for us, everyone is custom tailored, delivered to us, so that we might in some way use that opportunity to reveal his presence in that experience. And the only way in which we can reveal his presence is through truth. If at the moment that something is happening with us, between us and our children, between us and our spouses, between us and our colleagues, between us and our friends, between us and the Siddur, between us and the Gemara, wherever we are, whatever we're doing, between us and the tennis court, wherever we are, whatever is happening, there is a moment which is irreplaceable, never was, never will be again, but an opportunity for us to liberate the divine energy in that moment. And we can do so by being truthful. But it's very hard to be truthful. Most of us are Pesach al Shtei HaSeifim. We have one leg in one place and one leg in the other. It's hard. It's hard to be completely honest. The Ramon in the first Siman in Shulchan Aruch and Erech Chaim tells us that we live in the presence of the Melech Malchei Amlochim. And when someone lives with a consciousness that we're in the presence of the infinite, and that every moment is one where this loving presence looks to us, hopefully, that we will act in such a way that will say that, will reveal that in some way that we are conscious of the fact that he is there. And that consciousness itself unlocks that divine energy into the world. So what happens? What happens when our emuna about Kav Yochel's presence, what happens about our Betochen and the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in ultimate control of everything except our Bechira, which is the response to that momentary opportunity? What happens if we think we're in control? And what happens if we forget that Hashem is really there? So then we become the proprietors. Then we own, in a certain sense, we're responsible. If we're successful, we are arrogant, and if we fail, then we are a failure, dismal failures, and we're depressed because it was all us. So being totally honest means that we have to stop fooling ourselves. The Kotzke Rebbe once said to someone, you know what a chassid is? And his chassid said to him, a chassid, he sold, so the Gemara says, a chassid is someone who's mischassid im koina, he goes lifnim yishur sadin, he goes beyond the call of duty. Kotzke said to him, fine. So a tzaddik is someone who does the din, that does the halacha, and a chassid is someone who goes lifnim yishur sadin. I'll tell you the halacha, you tell me what's, how you can be a chassid. A person should not deceive his friend. That's the din. So how can you be a chassid? Chassid didn't answer. He said to him, I'll tell you. A tzaddik doesn't fool, he doesn't deceive somebody else, and a chassid doesn't deceive himself. Doesn't fool himself. And we're constantly engaged in this illusion, in living in a world in which, yes, we believe, and yes, we have, yes, I believe in Hashgacha Pratis, at the same time, I do things that are clearly a contradiction to either my emunah or my belief in Hashgacha Pratis. And what's so tragic about this is that it's comprehensive, so that it doesn't just end up in one place. If someone is not a mensch in the workplace, if someone is abusive in the workplace, if someone is untruthful in the workplace, it's going to end up somehow in his character. And when he goes home, he's bringing his character with him. It's going to end up in his relationship with his wife and with his children. And when he goes to shul and he davens, it's going to end up in his davening, because there's no such thing as isolating one part of your life. There's no such thing as someone who is not a respectful, caring, concerned spouse at home, being able somehow to isolate that. Okay, that's, you know, I'm an ogre in the family, but in the community, or in the business world, I'm a tzaddik. And he may in fact do things right there. But it's not an absolute. There's no way to isolate it. So the question of midos, not just the halacha of right and wrong, stealing and honesty, and there's a question of character. And character is something that builds on the truth. So that if we want to talk about being a dayan, and everybody's a dayan, everybody is a judge, even if we don't belong to the Chesed Mishpat, we're making judgments every moment of the day. Judgments about how we can respond to the things that are going on in our daily lives, moment by moment. We're constantly making decisions that could be and are supposed to be really moments that we relate to, that we dedicate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Supposed to solidify our relationship with Him, to reveal His presence, to coronate Him over everything that happens in our lives, to make sure that the way in which we live proclaims Him as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sovereign over everything. So it's not just that we're going to be able to do things right. We'll go to the Choshen Mishpat Kolel, and they're going to tell us what's right and what's wrong. But in addition to that, Choshen Mishpat Kolel has to make sure that we also understand that there's a deeper level. There's an emes lamita. There's an emes that goes to the emes of our being, to the nikuda pnimius, to that neshama that we carry around with us, which is supposed to affect and become a predicate of everything that we do. I don't know that it's the business of the Chesed Mishpat Kollel to ask people questions about what takes place in the workplace. We have such a promiscuous society today. Men and women interact in offices in ways in which you can't even begin to describe. I don't want to even tell you what my experience has been over the past 50 years with what happens in the workplace. And the fact is that it is... when men and women work in the same space, they are at risk. It's just part of the hard wiring of human beings. And we need to take precaution upon precaution. I'm going, okay, oh, here is Twersky, he's a zealot, and he's here preaching this hispadlos, this separation, we got to make bigger machitzas. Rabbi say, who are we kidding? What kind of nonsense is it? We really want to deceive ourselves? Yes, no, it doesn't make any. Someone told me that a bocher came into Rabbi Lapian when Rabbi Lapian was in his late 80s, and he asked for the shoes to go to. I think it was a chassan, a family chassan. So Rabbi said to him, "Nu in vaset zayin mitshmiras einayim, what's going to happen with?" You know, what you're going to see at this wedding. So he said, Rabbi, it's not going to hurt. It's not going to bother me. Rebellia said to him, listen, I'm almost 90 years old, and I'm mostly blind. He said, and it would bother me, and you want to tell me that it's not going to bother you. If we were brutally honest, then we would understand that when we are in a workplace which is co-ed, that we need to be so zohir, so cautious. I mean, there's no defense for some of the things that go on in the name of, well, but I have to earn a living. Yes, we do have to earn a living. But we need to have gedorim. We need to be realistic. We need to have emes la'amitai. You can make a case that the halacha said this is okay, but you can't make a case that say this is emes la'amitai. It's not la'amitai when we are fooling ourselves. The business world is full of all kinds of shenanigans, which are part of the way in which people do business. And people have told me about the fact that their competitors are doing A, B, and C, and that if they don't do A, B, and C, they can't compete. But A, B, and C are dishonest. It's not emes la'amitai. And when we bring that money home that we earned in ways that are not consistent with, if even one could defend the halacha, but the fact that it is so so beneath the dignity of the way in which it, Ben Yisroel does business. And then we bring that home, and our kids eat the food that we have purchased with that money. Do we really think that we have immunized our children against this world, which is such an angry, hostile, promiscuous, poisoned world in every which way? And I'm not trying to suggest that if we have children or grandchildren that have gone off the derech, that, you know, that we're responsible. But I do want to suggest that we need to stop fooling ourselves, stop deceiving ourselves. We need to be dayonim. We need to be judges who do things emes la'amitai, because the way in which we deal with our home will affect how we deal in the workplace. And the way in which we deal with our chaverim in shul are going to affect the way in which we deal with ourselves in the Beis Hamikdash, and the way in which we deal with our chavrusas in the Beis Hamikdash is going to affect the way in which we do business. You can't pull a person, you can't dissect a person. We are one ineffable, indivisible whole, and everything that we do affects everything else. It reverberates across, it ripples across the entire personality. We have so many excuses why we don't get up to the davening, and why we don't go to the minyanim, and why we don't learn, or why we don't learn enough because I don't have the right chavrus and it's not the right time, and I don't have the time, and why I don't give tzedakah, and why I don't. And we have, and they're all legitimate, but they're not emes lamitay. They're not the truth. Tis the truth. So the truth has many, many shades, many flavors. But if we're serious about wanting to see to it that ourselves and those whom we love, the things that we do will have permanence, will have a certain purity, a sustainability, then we have to start working. We have to be conscious of the fact that there's an emes lamitay, and that emes lamitay affects every single thing that we do in every precinct of our life, because each one becomes a predicate of the other. We all have an opportunity on a personal level to make ourselves a mishkan, on a personal level to make our families a mishkan, our homes a mishkan. And we have to own up. We have to do things that make sense. Stop cutting ourselves so much slack. Let me just think for a moment the way so many of us observe Shabbos. Is it really so terrible? Or so we'll read a newspaper. Maybe we'll even read a newspaper at the Shabbos table. Or we'll talk about things at the Shabbos table. They have no relationship at all to the kedusha of that mizbeach, which is our shulchan. So is the Shabbos a whole Shabbos? Were we shamed of Shabbos? And do we think really that if we were not shame of Shabbos, that the weekdays are going to be somehow uplifted by the Kedusha that we absorb during the course of Shabbos? Time, like everything else, is part of the whole, which is that which we experience. And you can't cut it apart. You can't separate it. You can't amputate it. So when we begin to look at ourselves under the scope of emes lamitay, when we are big enough, courageous enough to say to ourselves, this is bunk, this is a rationalization, it's an excuse, I can do better. We may not even have made that admission, yet made a change. But the beginning of change is awareness. The beginning of change is the admission. The beginning of change is to say, this is something that I must begin to work on, and to set something into motion, to change it. To change what we do with our eyes and what we do with our tongues. To change the liberties that we give ourselves. We take stuff into our homes. And, you know, there's been so much talk about the internet. But are we being honest about what we see on the internet, how much time we spend on it. And then to say to ourselves, there's no impact, there's no influence, there's nothing that saturates the air in our home and affects our children or even ourselves and our spouses. An awareness that says, this is untrue. I recognize I'm doing a lot of things that are right, but emes lamitai. The moment that we have dedicated ourselves to emes lamitai, where it begins to affect our midos, where it begins to affect our consciousness of bitachon and our emunah, that's the moment at which the energy of our lives will change, and we'll begin to experience a simcha sachayim. This joy that has been so elusive, that everybody wants to do anything that they possibly can to experience some joy, it will be restored to us. It will be restored to us because there is strength and there is joy and jubilance in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we are living emes la'amitai, we will be revealing Hashem's sovereignty and presence in everything that we do. The more, the merrier. So, hopefully I will have listened to what I just said. And in my own increased consciousness, there will be more joy. But I would urge that the beginning of our redemption is to redeem ourselves from a world of illusion, where we fool ourselves, where we deceive ourselves, where we tell ourselves it's okay, where we don't take ownership for the fact that things are not emes lamitai. And when each one of us will be done in our lives, emes lamitai, that emes will grant perpetuity to everything that we do, and we'll have a feeling that we are participating in something that has a nitzchius to it. Yankiv Avinu Loi Meis, because to everything he brought the Aleph, the commander, the general, so to speak, the Aluf of the world. He connected Ribbono Shel Olam to everything. So when you connect the Aleph to Meis, then there is eternity. Yankiv Avinu Loi Meis, and we his children, as the Drash goes, we know that Loi Meis, because just as we are alive, so is he alive. And we can be so alive if we are strong enough and courageous enough to face the truth. Shkech.
Unbelievable. If anybody wants to fill out a card, Emes Lamitai, they're allowed to fill it out. Shkoyach, boys. Shkoyach.